You are listening to Adventures in Buddhism. I'm your host, Morris Sullivan. In this episode, I'll share with you a talk that I gave at White Sands Buddhist Center about teachers. What makes someone a Dharma teacher? And how can you tell if you have found one who is right for you? There's a story in the Pali Canon about a monk named Tisa and his relationship with his teacher, the Buddha. Venerable Tisa seems to have been suffering from depression. He was talking to some other monks and he said, "Friends, my body feels like I'm drugged. I've lost my way. The teachings don't make sense to me anymore, and I just feel overwhelmed. I just don't feel good about my practice, and I've lost faith." The other monks told him, "Go see the Buddha." And so he did, and he told the Buddha how he was feeling. And the Buddha gave him some advice about various things. And then he said, "Tisa, imagine there are two men who meet on the road. One of the men doesn't know the way to his destination, but the other does. And so he tells the man who is lost, 'Friend, go on ahead until you come to a fork in the road. Don't go to the left. Take the road to the right. And then you'll come to a dense jungle. Keep going. Stay on the road. You'll come to a great swamp. Don't get mired in that. Go on past it. And eventually you'll come to a steep precipice. Be careful there. Go a bit farther and you'll find a delightful level stretch of ground.'" The Buddha explained this parable. The man who is lost is the average person. The one who knows the way is the one who is awakened. The fork in the road is the point of wavering on the path. The road to the left is that of wrong views. The one on the right is the Noble Eightfold Path. The dense jungle is delusion. The great swamp is the distraction of sense desire. The steep precipice is anger and despair. The delightful stretch of level ground, that's enlightenment. "Cheer up, Tisa," he said. "Don't worry, I'm here to help you find your way."
So I realized last weekend, a colleague messaged me and wished me a happy anniversary. And I said, "What are you talking about?" And then I realized we both became senseis on the same weekend 12 years ago. And so that had shown up in like his Facebook feed or something. So he was wishing me a happy birthday or a happy anniversary. And and I started thinking about what that meant, you know, and what that was like back then. And I decided I would show you this. So when I first got that credential, that sensei credential, I asked a couple of my teachers, you know, what does that mean? I mean, it's a sensei, it means teacher. So what does it mean to teach? And so this thing here, you can probably barely see it. It's kind of rough around the edges and stuff. When I first went to give a talk to a Unitarian congregation, I printed this out. This is called the Udayi Sutra, and I'll read it to you. It says, "On one occasion, the Blessed One, the Buddha, was staying in Kosambi in Gosthita's Park, which is a monastery. And at that time, Venerable Udayan was sitting surrounded by a large assembly of householders teaching the Dharma. Venerable Ananda saw that, and on seeing him, went to the Blessed One, and he bowed down, and he sat to one side, and he said, 'Venerable Udayan is sitting surrounded by a large assembly of householders teaching the Dharma.' And the Buddha said, 'It's not easy to teach the Dharma to others, Ananda. The Dharma should be taught to others only when five qualities are established within the person teaching.' Which five? The Dharma should be taught with the thought, 'I will speak step by step.' The Dharma should be taught with the thought, 'I will speak explaining the sequence of cause and effect.' The Dharma should be taught with the thought, 'I will speak out of compassion.' It should be taught with the thought, 'I will speak not for the purpose of material reward.' It should be taught with the thought, 'I will speak without exalting myself or disparaging others.' It's not easy to teach the Dharma. Should only be taught when these five qualities are established within the mind of the person teaching. So the reason I want to talk to you about that today, besides the fact that, you know, I recognize that I had this anniversary and all of that, is, you know, things come up once in a while. You ever look at me or someone else who's sitting up here and go, what makes that guy a teacher? Or female, what makes a woman a teacher? Sure you have. And I get that question. In fact, somebody asked me this morning, do you accept students and that sort of thing? So the question comes up frequently about what makes someone a teacher. And, you know, do they have to be perfect? Can one live a faultless life? Or can you be a human? One member of my community in Deland was considering going somewhere to a talk, and they had heard some gossip, as they put it, about the teacher there, and they were afraid they weren't going to like him. And so they wanted to know, should they go? You know, could they learn anything useful from a teacher they don't like? And I was at the prison one day. I got there early before the guys got there, and there was a book on the shelf in the Hindu section called The World of the Gurus. And it was sort of an analysis of like the history of guruism from the perspective of the late 60s, early 70s. And, you know, what qualified these people and who should you follow and that kind of stuff. And I thought that was interesting. It was an interesting conversation. So, you know, it's a little bit confusing when you come to Buddhism because different traditions view this idea of being a teacher in different ways. So my first ordination was as a Theravada monk, and in Theravada Buddhism, basically once you're ordained, you're expected to teach. You're not necessarily expected to know very much, you know, but if somebody says, teach me the Dharma, you should be able to give them a talk. And so when you ordain, they give you this like little book with like sort of, not cheat sheets really, but it's like, okay, here's something you can talk about, you know, talk about the five spiritual powers or whatever. And, you know, people who are ordained for a long time and give a lot of talks, they get to be pretty good at it. And so they're in high demand. But even if you just got ordained yesterday, if somebody says, tell me about the Dharma, you should be able to talk about something. And one of the reasons I wanted to talk about this is that I know people ask me sometimes, oh, this person at work asked me, why are you a Buddhist? Tell me about this Buddhism thing you do. Well, when you answer a question like that, you're teaching the Dharma. Now, you may not have a lot, you know. Some of you came here today for the first time. You might walk out of here going, oh, you know, I think I'm going to come back. And then you'll have a conversation with somebody. Why are you going to that place? Well, your answer to that question is a Dharma talk. It might be a very short one. It might be a very simple one. It might be, I felt something when I went there. Or I heard something that really clicked with me. And then what that was. And it doesn't need to be scholarly. It should come from your heart. I felt different when I was there. And I thought maybe this would help me transcend some of the stress that I'm dealing with. And that's a really good Dharma talk right there. And that's enough. But, you know, in a lot of traditions, the Mahayana traditions, usually there's some form of credentialing. So I did a Buddhist seminary program. That's what I had finished 12 years ago that I got that notice about. Other people in some traditions, you practice for many, many years maybe, and all of a sudden one day a teacher says, hey, give a talk. In tantric Buddhism, you know, you're expected to have a sort of root guru who's kind of your main teacher, and you can't learn anything without his or her permission and that sort of stuff. It's considered to be a direct transmission. Others follow some kind of similar lines. Others say, you know, you should listen to Dharma talks and you should learn from them. And it doesn't matter whether you're listening to somebody from the same tradition or not. You know, get something. At the prison, we're reading this book together called The Tanisho, which is a collection of sayings from Pure Land Buddhism. And they're sayings by a teacher named Shinran, who was from the 12th century in Japan. And he was studying a form of Buddhism that's very complicated, has a lot of practices that are intended to get you enlightened in this lifetime and all that kind of thing. And he was having a lot of trouble with it. And he had this dream that the Bodhisattva Avalokitesvara came to him and said, go find Honen, who was this other teacher, and get a teaching from him. And so he went and he found Honen. And Honen taught him about the saying the Nimbutsu, Namo Amida Butsu. You'll hear Vietnamese people saying Adita Phat or Namo Adita Phat. And that's basically it. It's calling on help from Amitabha Buddha toward your enlightenment. And so he said, this is perfect for me because I'm not perfect enough to do this path that involves living in this perfect moral life and all of this kind of stuff. I need something for an ordinary person like me that will get me enlightened. So, you know, the answer to the question that came up, do teachers have to be perfect human beings? It's no. They just have to be available to the Dharma and in a position to help you find your path. So Shenron's view of teaching was a little different. He said, I don't have any disciples. He said, I don't give my students anything. If they awaken, it's because of the compassion of the Buddha. I can't take credit for that. I kind of like that. Because in my experience teaching, it's very difficult to teach something. We're learning skills here. And any skill, you have to practice. You know, Fred back there is a good guitar player. And he's probably had some really good teachers. Did you have some pretty good teachers? No? But he learned how to play the guitar. You could read books and watch videos or whatever, but if you don't practice, you're not going to learn to play the guitar or the piano or learn how to lay tile or build or bricks or do anything else, sew robes. Nothing you could do without some practice. People can tell you how to do it, but if you don't do it, you're not going to develop that skill. To listen to teachings is one thing, but to be a good student is a whole different thing. It's one of the reasons I started thinking about this. So I'm a chaplain at Stetson University, for those of you who don't know me. And I was at sort of a year-end retreat thing, and someone used the term studenting. Said, we need good studenting. You know, you think about teaching, and that's part of the equation, but for learning to happen, there has to be good studenting. One of my teachers and a beloved mentor, the one who gave me the sensei title, he passed away about 6 weeks ago. But he was kind of funny about the idea of teaching. He once said, I don't like to think about teaching the Dharma. He said, I'll tell him, let's study this together. And I think that's a good way of looking at the student-teacher relationship, studying together. That said, he gave me the title sensei, which means teacher. So there's an expectation that one would teach. But there's also an expectation that it's a two-way street. Dogen, who is the founder of Soto Zen, says something. I'll talk to you about a little bit more about him later. But he said, you should always revere the teacher, and the teacher should revere the student. You know, he said, you should bow to the teacher, and the teacher should bow to the student. Anyway, when I got that title, sensei, I was reaching out to churches and stuff to give talks. I was leading a group into land already and been facilitating meetings, but not really thinking of myself as teaching meetings. But people were starting to look at me and going, oh, you've got this title now. You should teach. And so I had this thought, like, well, who I think I am? You know, that's really arrogant to think I could teach the Dharma. And that's what led me to research what the Buddha said about that. And I came across that sutta. So let me go back to that. So he said, before someone teaches, establish five factors in the mind. I will teach step by step. I will teach explaining the sequence of cause and effect. I will speak out of compassion. I will speak without exalting myself or disparaging others. I will speak without the expectation of material reward. So he doesn't say that a teacher has to be famous or eloquent or good looking, thank goodness. They don't need special robes or a special certificate. They need to establish certain things in their minds. So I'm telling you this because as you're looking at teachers and thinking about who to follow on your spiritual path and who to listen to, see, you know, these things established in their minds. And the first is to teach step by step. You have to know your subject well enough to present it clearly and give some thought about that. It's not always easy to, so I get asked questions here after that talk. So Dr. Chow will say, does anybody have any questions? And some of them come quite from left field, which is okay, not a complaint, but it's a little hard to speak step by step, but eventually you get there. Might start in the middle, might start at the end, but you get to that step. So if somebody asks you, why are you going to this Buddhist temple? You might start with, well, I feel good when I leave. And then back up, why? Why? What felt good? Where am I going to go with that? That would be the step-by-step process of answering that question. Explaining the sequence of cause and effect. So you will often hear me talk in terms of ending suffering. People ask questions, you know, about, is there a creator in Buddhism? You know, what made the world? Those kinds of things. What about life and death? Do you really believe in reincarnation? All this kind of stuff. The effect we're after is the end of suffering. The Buddha would say, I teach suffering and the end of suffering. And so when you're approaching a teaching as part of your studenting, how is this thing going to help me end my suffering? How is it going to help me deal with my stress in this life? How is it going to help me connect to something that's to whatever is around after I'm gone? That sort of thing. What is causing the stress? What would cause the liberation? How do I do it? The teacher should speak out of compassion. Again, this is to transcend suffering. And so I always bring myself back to that. Even if somebody's challenging me, which happens once in a while, I'll get somebody who wants to prove to me that, you know, they know more than I do. And I have to remind myself, they're trying to end suffering. Years ago at the prison, I got at the end of the very end of the meeting, I get up and say, well, anybody got any last questions? And somebody goes, yes, can you explain the 12 factors of dependent origination? Well, this is about 8 hours of Dharma talk to actually explain it. And so I said, well, not in the 2 minutes we have left here, but remind me to talk to you about this next time. And so I talked to one of my teachers, happened to talk to one of my teachers that weekend. And I said, you know, this guy who's always asking these complicated questions, I think he's doing it to show off. And he just asked me to explain this complicated thing. And, you know, well, what should I do with that? And he goes, maybe he's trying to end suffering. Okay, how can I answer that question in a way that will help him figure out what's causing his stress and figure out how to transcend that? By the way, that doesn't mean that I need to be a likable person, you know? So I have some teachers who are pretty gruff sometimes, and they'll really kind of get on you if you're not paying attention or not doing what they think you should be doing. It doesn't mean that the teacher has to be superficially kind. They don't need to come over with a van and help you move, any of that stuff. It means that they consider what they say that can help you live a more authentic life, even if that's not necessarily what you want to hear. Now, you know, a good teacher also pays attention to who they're talking to and gets to know you and knows what you're ready for and that kind of thing. And that can be a challenge, especially, you know, somebody's asking a question during a retreat or whatever, and suddenly I have to answer questions generally. And it requires you to accept the student unconditionally. So teachers don't have to like you either. They just have to accept you unconditionally as someone, as a sentient being who is trying to transcend suffering and answer the question from there. teacher should speak without exalting themselves or disparaging others. You know, and you hear that in some traditions. You don't encounter it too much in Buddhism, people who put down other teachers, but you hear it from in other traditions sometimes. And, you know, if somebody knows their stuff, they don't need to tell you they know their stuff. They don't need to prove that they know more than you do. They don't need to disparage anybody. If they know their stuff, that's enough. And if you spend enough time around them, you'll figure that out. And without expectation of material reward. So this is an interesting thing that happens in Buddhism. It is your practice to give. To be charitable, you know, it's a good thing to do. There's psychologists who study that, and they find that generous people are happier people. And so part of the practice is to support the temples. And also, you know, it helps keep the lights on, right? And it's a good part of your practice to support teachers that you benefit from. But the teacher should not come into a situation going, oh, I'm going to make a lot of money there. Because once we do that, there's a real tendency to start thinking, I should say what they want to hear instead of what they need to hear, you know? And that's, so be aware of that. The reason that Buddhism is by donation is that it means I can say what I think is true. And you can listen without wondering whether I'm trying to manipulate you in some way. Okay. If I had to sell tickets, then suddenly I have to put on a show. As I said, good teaching requires good studenting. And when my colleague said that in the meeting, it reminded me of this story where there was a large group of people who wanted to hear the Dharma. And so they decided they would go together, and they were going to the monastery where the Buddha was staying. And as they were coming up to the temple, they happened upon a monk named Venerable Rāvada. Rāvada was quite an advanced practitioner. But for some reason, he seemed a little blasé about the idea of giving Dharma talks that day, so he gave kind of a cursory answer to him. Well, the group were unhappy with that, and so they left him and continued on their way. And then they encountered Venerable Sariputta. So Sariputta was he was the Buddha's right-hand guy. And they asked for a Dharma talk, and he was very gracious. He agreed to talk to them. And then he did this deep dive into this very obscure topic and went into exhaustive detail, and they got bored and confused and left. So then they ran into Venerable Ananda. I talked about Ananda before. He was the Buddha's cousin. He had a great memory. And so you'll hear Ananda a lot because he recalled a lot of the discourses, and that's why we have them today. Well, he also agreed to give a teaching, but he gave a real overview of the main summary of Buddhism, and they decided that this was too sketchy, and he didn't talk very long, and so they got mad at him, and they left. And so they finally got to the Buddha, and they complained about the teachings they'd gotten so far. You know, one guy was disinterested, one was overly complicated, one was too terse. They didn't like any of these guys. And the Buddha said, you know, blaming others is nothing new. It happens all the time. They blame one who is silent. They blame one who speaks too much. They blame one who speaks too little. No one in this world has never been blamed or is always praised. But one who is praised by the wise, who knows he is endowed with knowledge and virtue, then even the gods respect that one. And hearing this, so these people had just heard three Dharma talks. They might not have liked them, but they had heard the Dharma. And this was what they needed to realize, that in order to develop wisdom, they needed to take responsibility for it. And so they became just devoted Buddhists. So you'll see references sometimes in discourses in Buddhism to an untrained person. You know, the untrained person will do this or that, but the trained person, the Buddhist, will understand something better. So we're teaching a skill. You know, in the Metta Sutra that we recited earlier, this is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Skilled in goodness. So you're learning a skill. Like any skill, this can't be taught. You can't just do it once. I teach Tai Chi too. One day I was teaching Tai Chi in a park and this woman was walking her dog and she stopped and watched me and she goes, I turned around and said hello and she goes, oh, I envy you so much. I said, why? She goes, well, I tried that once. I couldn't do it. I said, well, if I tried it once, I couldn't do it either. You know, got to work at this. And this is the thing with Buddhism. You know, I can't give you a magic bullet that's going to solve all your problems. You have to practice these things. You need to develop faith in the teacher and in the teachings by realizing the fruit of them. So this is kind of an interesting thing. There was a group of people called the Kalamas who went to the Buddha, and they said, you know, all these different teachers come here, and one will say something, and then he'll leave, and the next one comes in, and he disparages what the other one said, and he'll say something completely different. And how do I know? How do I know which of these people to follow? And the Buddha said, okay, if you can see for yourself that something leads to your harm, don't do it. And if you can see for yourself that something leads to peace and happiness, do that. And then he gave them a talk on the cultivating goodwill and that sort of thing, so they'd have something to work with. But this is the thing. See for yourself, what is the fruit of this teaching? So draw near to the teacher. Listen to what's being said. Make sure you understand how it applies to you. And then put it into practice and then see what happens. So the next thing is all of my teachers, I have been blessed with some really amazing teachers in my life, including the abbot here, Venerable Kaitien. And when I met him early on and he told me he was going to go to Japan to study for a while, I was really impressed with that. I thought, okay, this guy's still studying. If as soon as you think you know everything, you're in trouble. All of my teachers still study, some of them with their teachers. Koyo, who passed away, he looked for teachings in his garden and things like that. One of the last conversations I had with him, he said, I was in my garden and I saw that all the fruit trees had budded out, the buds were getting really fat. And he goes, and they were telling me, get ready. We're getting ready. And that was a teaching to him. So in the Shobo Genzo, Dogen, who founded Soto Zen, was talking about his view of teachers. And he said, once I had established my mind, in other words, once he'd set his mind on awakening and realized the path he was on, he said, I began to revere all teachers. And as a result of that, he had achieved full awakening. He said, this being so, we should hope that even trees and stones might preach to us. We should investigate even fences and walls. He tells a story of the great master Joshu setting off to find the Dharma. And Joshu vowed, I shall question anyone who is superior to me, even a child of 7. And I will teach anyone who is inferior to me, even a man of 100. He said, this old man was willing to prostrate himself on asking a 7-year-old about the Dharma. This is a rare example of a resolute spirit and the working of the mind of an eternal Buddha. It's like the thirsty person finding a drink. And so I hope that this has been beneficial to you, that you walk out of here with something that you can make useful to you in living your life. So thank you for your attention.
Thank you for listening to Adventures in Buddhism. I hope this has helped you find your path. Incidentally, I retired recently from one of my jobs, university chaplain, so I'll have time now for more podcasting. If you haven't already done so, visit my other podcast, Holding Up the Heavens, and subscribe to it on Spotify. I'll be adding more episodes to that soon. Now go save the world.